This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel. Because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
President's Day savings are happening now at the Home Depot with up to 40% off select appliances. Looking to upgrade your fridge? Check out LG's newest model, serving up ice in all kinds of styles. Cube, crushed, craft ice, and now new mini craft ice straight from the dispenser. From cold brew to fizzy favorites, these refrigerators will have you entertaining like a pro. Shop President's Day savings and get up to 40% off, plus free delivery on select appliances like LG at the Home Depot. Free delivery on appliance purchases of $1,498 or more. Offer valid February 5th through the 25th, U.S. only. See store online for details.
If you've listened to this show for a while, you know that if there's one tool I absolutely cannot live without, it's the Onyx Hunt app. I use Onyx year-round to mark spots, find new properties, access landowner information, and so much more. But throughout the year, I tend to use the app differently depending on what I'm doing. Right now, I'm always using it to find stream bank easements in the drift list. And when I'm not doing that, I'm using the wind direction feature to mark how wind and thermals impact areas I plan to spend time in this fall. To learn more about all the other features that Onyx offers, head on over to onyxmaps.com. Summer is here, and while hunting season might still feel like a long ways off, it's time to start getting your gear dialed in for this fall. This season, I'm proud to be partnering with XOP, makers of cutting-edge, lightweight, and affordable mobile hunting equipment. Whether you've been mobile hunting for years and looking for an awesome ultralight addition to your kit, or you're totally new to mobile hunting and want to give it a try without breaking the bank, XOP has a stand, platform, set of sticks, or a harness for you. This fall, I plan to be using the super lightweight X2 climbing sticks, retrograde platform, and the Mondo hybrid harness. Go build your kit today at xopgear.com. Hey guys, just wanted to take a quick sec to tell you about our good friends over at Huntworth. You guys, if you're looking for high quality hunting clothing and outdoor apparel, Huntworth is your home for it. You guys, this stuff is top of the line at a price point that is not going to break the bank. This fall, I'm going to be running around in the Shelton Midweight Grid Fleece, their hoodie there. I love me a hoodie. I can't live without one. It's got a built-in face mask. It's grid fleece, and it's got a half zipper. So on those hot days, I can unzip that thing and cool off and vent if I've got a long hike into the woods. I'm also going to be rocking the Durham lightweight pants and the Bluff Woods unlined neck gaiter. I love me a neck gaiter. You've heard me talk about this all last fall. I it's one of those things that I just can't go into the woods without. So between that, that's going to be my kit for this fall. And you can go get yours today at huntworthgear.com. I highly suggest you do. They're an awesome company with awesome people and, more importantly, awesome products. Thanks, guys. What is going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the Wisconsin Sportsman Podcast. I'm your host, Pierce Nellis, and this is your home for all things hunting, fishing, and conservation in the Badger State. Folks, I can't believe I'm saying this right now, but we made it. By the time this comes out, this coming weekend will be opening day of archery season. Now, I've got a Michigander on the other line here, Nick Otto from the Huntervore Podcast. I know, Nick, you're not in the same boat as us, so I feel like I'm kind of rubbing your nose in this right now, but...
I tell you what, this start in September, man, I thought we were going to get through this episode, Pierce, without bringing up some real heated stuff, but man, I tell you what, it's tough watching everybody get out into the stands, get everybody get excited, but you know what, we'll be there soon, we'll be out there October 1st, so have your fun. You know what, the mosquitoes are still out anyway, so you guys are going to get fed up while you're out there.
Yep, exactly. That's very true. Hopefully by October 1st over by you guys, hopefully by us too, we've got that first frost on the ground, or that first hard frost to maybe kill some of those bugs off. But folks, I just said it there. I've got Nick Otto, host of the Huntivore Podcast, on the Michigander, as we just said. Nick, how are we doing tonight, man?
Oh, we're doing great. At the time of this recording, yeah, we had a long weekend here. It was Labor Day weekend. Mm-hmm. Got out with the family, got out with some of the brother-in-laws, just enjoyed the outside today. Hit a new disc golf course, so that was a lot of fun. What I like about doing disc golf rather than ball golf is because I'm such a shitty shot, I'll throw that disc way off into the weeds, and more often than you would expect, I find little honey holes for foraging mushrooms. Like, uh-huh. I have found chicken in the woods. I found my own solo patch of morels just by having a bad drive. So I always keep my eyes open when I throw it into the deep stuff. Made some delicious barbecue. I went with some Venny shot shells. I don't know if you've ever seen those, but anyway, mm-hmm. you put sausage into a manicotti, pasta. It's a dried manicotti. It looks about the size of a 12 gauge, and you stuff it full of sausage. I put in some peppers. I had a little bit of cheese in there, and then you wrap it in bacon. I know it's a cardinal sin that I put on my own self. Don't wrap venison in bacon. Takes away from it. But at the same time, I was making meat candy. So those went on the smoker, 300 for an hour, pulled them off, hit them with sauce. And I tell you what, we just sat around and enjoyed those all day today. So that was our weekend.
Holy smokes, dude, two things here. So folks, if you didn't just pick up, Nick knows a thing or two about cooking, butchering, processing game. That's what we're going to be talking about tonight, just as we get into the start of the season here. We're all going to be making stupid mistakes here as we go to, you know, cut up that first deer. It never fails. You know, we forget the knife that we normally use, or we cut into that deer, and then all of a sudden you're like, son of a gun, like, I remember last year I did this right. What am I doing wrong this time and stuff? So we're going to get to that. The other thing you just said, dude, I had never ever heard that wrapping venison in bacon is a cardinal sin. What is that about?
I made it for myself. Because it's that people are masking the whole idea of venison. Now, I'm making a lot of assumptions as I put this out here, being from the Midwest as well. You know, I'm on the Great Lakes State. I love my ranch. I love cheese curds. Like, I'm not going to down any of that. But at the same time, to take a smoked domestic product and wrap it around venison is going to rob you of what venison is supposed to taste like. 90% of everybody who eats food gets it domestically, and they love the flavor of corn and soybean fed animals. Very mild, very not in your face. And the 10% of us that then jump into the woods and acquire our own, be it by hunting and fishing, we get a taste of something wild, something different. The deer, yes, eats soybeans and eats corn. I'm not covering that up at all. Those things are as much corn fed as a lot of things. Mm-hmm. But they also don't fully just sit there on that for the entire time. They veg on everything else that they lay in, that they hide in. There is a flavor to it. And I think just people have always been hesitant of a gamey taste, where it's, I think with a little bit of extra care with that venison, it's going to go from gamey to something that you enjoy. There is, and I got to find a better word, there's a funk that is really good about stuff that grows wild and that we acquire ourselves. It's like a charcuterie bit where that is so unique to this specific animal. Like, that needs to be celebrated. So to dumb it down by wrapping it in bacon, I just have something. It doesn't resonate with me. Now, I had already made venison sausage, and when you did eat it, you did taste the venison sausage. I use a pork back fat, unsmoked, to add an 80-20 mix to it. It is a mild fat, so I still taste my venison. You could do this with straight as well, but that's what I do for my burger. But being able to put that all together and essentially just use the rendered bacon fat to soften up that vessel, be it the manicotti pasta, it just worked itself all together. So there was some smoky goodness. That's what I was going for. And so, yeah, that's where I had to, I don't know, make my rule of never use bacon to never use bacon sometimes, maybe. Like, we just keep adding in the adjectives.
Well, hey, man, I won't tell. And now that you think about it, or now that you explain it that way, man, I don't know, you might have just sold me. I like that thought process and that rationale behind it of keep wild game wild. I really enjoy that. That's an interesting thing you mentioned there, too, just on the percentage of a deer's diet or a wild game's, you know, whatever it may be. We'll stick with deer. That's what we're going to be talking about tonight. The percentage of the diet that you've got, you know, feedlot cattle or even like grass fed cattle and stuff like that. Like, you notice the difference between if that cow has been standing in a feedlot versus if they have supplemental feed and then they can also go out and graze, just like you notice an even greater difference in the meat when you have venison that's, yeah, they're going to raid the bean field and the corn field, you know, every day, but it's not, they're going to sit there, they're going to eat woody browse, they're going to eat nettles, they're going to, you know, hit the apple orchard or something like that. Yeah, really does.
They hit it when it's ripe. They hit it when it's their peak of the season. Because, I mean, shoot, you'll see a lot of guys, like, you'll see a lot of deer, when the bean field goes yellow, you know, the pods are still there, but they kind of move off of that. And they move on to something else. The taste, the desireness is there. So they'll hit those things when they're at their prime and then move on to something else when it gets to that prime. So it might be the soybeans all summer. And then shoot, come fall, that corn is just irresistible that they're going for. But at the same time, every day that thing is eating, it is eating twigs. It's eating browse. It's eating what's growing through the thicket. It's going into the deeper woods, going after acorns. Shoot, that's everybody talks about the lull, and it's like they're just dispersed out eating acorns. That seems to be the prime thing there. So, yeah, right. It's definitely a varied diet as opposed to what we get domestically.
Do you, and I'm just spitballing here now that we're on the topic, because I didn't expect to go this down this rabbit hole so soon, but so, you know how, like, you hear about bears, like bear fat, the spring bears when they're eating blueberries and stuff like that, rather than the fall when they're eating fish, like the fat, the taste, the rendering is like sweeter. It's more, it tastes better and stuff like that. I wonder if, and I doubt it, it's probably a long shot here, but I wonder if there's a noticeable difference in the flavor of venison throughout a year. Or, you know, I know that with venison, we generally don't use the fat nearly as much. And I would imagine that the fat's probably what picks up that flavor, because it's more of a, I guess there's a higher liquidity to it, to the fat over the muscle, I guess, in terms of, or a fluctuation, throughout the year and everything. But that makes me wonder if, you know, that early season doe who is just gorging herself on apples might have a little bit better flavor than, you know, that same deer the first week of January when she's just been like picking at, you know, twigs and corn stalks and stuff like that. I don't know.
Yeah. I believe that is a thing. Now we are, we are isolated to seasons, so it's hard to say, like, well, I'm going to try one in the middle of summer. Like, no, that doesn't fly. All of a sudden, mm-hmm. I get the DNR officer at my door. Hey, I need that deer. But I did get a good talk with Jesse Griffiths. He wrote the Hog Book. Mm-hmm. He's been on Meat Eater a few times. I actually went down. We were in Austin, Texas. I got a chance to visit his restaurant. If you're ever in Austin, find his restaurant. Oh, Do Die is like to die for. It is such a good restaurant to go to. But we talked hogs, and I was talking about the time of year that I was going to be down there in Oklahoma. And he was like, you hit that nail right on the head, because I hit it like February, March is when we were going down there. And he's like, down here, everything's starting to green up. Everything's fresh. Water's rolling. Like, we have a lot of rain coming through that time of year. It's not like summer where everything is parched and there's not a lot of precipitation. So he says those animals, not under stress to find food or to find water or even just a wallow, like, those are going to be much more fatty. They're going to be much more pleasantly flavored than versus an animal that's just eking by, that's just getting through those summer seasons. So that same hog could have two different times, you know, or two different flavors, be it the season.
Mm-hmm.
We know that cattle in themselves, based upon what they eat, will also change a few notes of that profile. I'm going to think that venison is probably the same way. And I mean, shoot, guys will talk about bucks that are up in the cedar swamps. Like, oh, it's hard to touch those things. Well, again, like, you know, maybe, you know, you're not used to eating cedar. You're not used to eating mm-hmm. something that browses a lot heavier. But what are those good notes that pop out of that? You know, yeah, you can't, you know, you might not like the flavor of it exactly like that, but like, shoot, try a little bit later in the season when it moves off the season or moves off the cedar. That same right. deer maybe has a different flavor profile. But yeah, you have something right too, that there is a lot of flavor in fat, and mm-hmm. most of the fat that we do take off venison, that goes to other projects, usually not down the gullet, real waxy. Try to avoid some of that. There's a few fats that you can digest and you can eat. The caul fat on the inside is really yep. good. Some of the suet on the inside, laced up by the kidneys, that melts out pretty good. That's not real intense. But yeah, that big rump, that big rump cap of fat back there that usually the does have, like, mm-hmm. yeah, we're gonna figure out something to do with that. Whether it's gonna be bird suet, I've been using it actually to coat my cast iron. That stuff works really well for seasoning cast iron.
I never would have thought of that. You just take like a little chunk of it on there, and do you rub it on there when it's cold and then heat the cast iron up, or do you render it down and kind of melt it and then rub it around, or how's that process look?
Yeah, I render it. So as we're, okay. as we're cutting up our deer, I'm getting my different piles, and the big fat pile, it used to just go to the composter. It's going to go to the birds, mm-hmm. crows are going to eat it or whatever. But I was like, man, I want more utilization. Whatever animal I'm pulling out, I don't want to be just kicking back on the landscape. I'm not oblivious to the idea that it's going to get used, but at the same time, like, listen, I took its life. I have a responsibility. I want to do something with this. And so finding different things to Absolutely. Do with that discard. And so those fat, we did make some bird suet that worked out really well. And that works the same way as it just rendering out the fat. So chop it up in little bits. I put it in my Dutch oven. I threw that in the oven for, I don't know, 300 degrees. And it was just like several hours. I just let it try to liquefy itself out. When I got as much as I did, I strained out the bits, poured it through some cheesecloth and through a strainer into just a little mason jar. And at that point, I could then pour it into molds that I had the seed already in. And then I had a bunch of extra left. And a buddy of mine was like, you should use that on your cast iron. Give that a go. And so I did. Like, I had one pan that I was like, all right, this one's looking a little rough. So I go through the whole process of it, get it nice and ripping hot, take that already. At that point, it would be tallow. It would be deer tallow at that point. But I would just scoop some of that out, rub it in the pan, wipe out the excess. And I tell you that an egg will just hover over the top of that thing. It's like nonstick. And here it's cast iron.
No kidding.
And that's the stuff, like, I don't think of anything cheaper that you can get, because, shoot, you get it with your shot. And you're gonna, you know, you get multiple deer, shoot, you're gonna have enough seasoning there to have a cast iron set for the entire year until you get another deer. Stuff goes a long ways.
Man, that sounds like it's like I had this weird, it was almost like an internal, like a visceral, like, because I know Michigan and Wisconsin, yes, we're rivals. We don't want to talk about the NFC North here or anything like that. But when it comes to like deer hunting states with like tradition and, you know, I mean, quite frankly, a lot of folks settled, you know, in these states. And what was the first thing they started doing was hunting. You know, there's a really rich tradition of hunting in these two states. And, man, that sounds like, I mean, using rendered venison fat to season up the cast iron. That sounds like about as Northwoods deer hunter, you know, passed down tradition as it gets, man. That
absolutely,
that's awesome. I love
our
that.
Shared ground of the superior state, be it, right? Be it the UP, how much cast iron, like through the generations, how many deer camps, like that's literally, they just took a bit of the fat and they were like, well, this is what I got. And they just went ahead and seasoned all that cast iron up there with that. I've got to think that a good portion of that is all up there.
Definitely. Absolutely, man. Well, dude, before I have to go eat a second dinner, because my mouth is watering the more we're talking about food here, I want to get into how can folks make sure that we're not, just as we kick off the season here, how can we avoid some of those frustrating hiccups? Or maybe you're somebody who's you've been processing game for years and years, and you just want to hear about another way to do it, or something, you know, pick up something else. Or maybe you're brand new to it, like we were saying off air, like I'm pretty green to it, this will be my third year trying to process my own deer, and you know, I definitely could stand to improve my efficiency and I think make a little bit better use of the game that I kill and everything. But I want to start it this way with just when we're in the field, when we get up to the deer and caring for that meat and everything. One of the things we talked about off air was a lot of folks, they get up to that deer for the first time that year and it's like they forgot how to field dress a deer. You know what I mean? Like it just, there's something that happens inside us where it feels foreign. What are some of the hiccups that you see or hear of folks making that puts a lot of meat at risk? What would you say is like the biggest no-no, I guess, or the big things to look out for when field dressing your deer?
Biggest no-no is going to be not field dressing your deer. Yeah. Getting the deer to the back of the truck and towed it around town. I know that's a thing. I was tempted to do it with the buck that I got. It was my big Michigan 8. I wanted to show it off, but I had a job to do, and that was to get this thing hung up, get this thing cooled down. I can show the rack later. We can show the taxidermy later. People can come to you once you've got it hung up, once you've got it starting to cool down, but to not do your due diligence of getting inside of that animal and getting all of that, that gut out of there. Especially with, the ruminants that they are, they don't necessarily have the digestive system that we have. They're not an omnivore. And so they've got a bacteria in that gut. So you even leave a buck or a doe overnight, there is going to, like, the bloat happens so fast. And now that you guys are starting shoot early here in September, you know, starting here in September, it's even worse because now temperatures are higher. So that gut starts to build up. So getting on that animal as quick as possible. And I get it. Like you get, sometimes you see it go out of your vision. You got to wait for a few hours. You got then get on that animal. It's not the end all be all. It's not going to be a full fail if you have to let it sit overnight and then to go get it the next day. You just might approach some of those cuts a little differently once we get on the inside. But the second biggest thing that I would then have you do is make sure that you fully go through that process as far as everything's got to come out. You've taken enough ginger, like, you've been ginger enough with that blade. You flip the blade up, and so that you're, when you're cutting into that lining, you're getting through that stomach, or excuse me, that that belly, the skin and the meat there, and you're avoiding puncturing the abdominals, whether it be the gut, whether it be the intestines, the stomach. Now, if your life slips, it's not the end all be all. We can fix this. We can keep on going, but getting it out completely, going from the anus all the way up in through the pelvis and pulling that all out there. Don't leave a section in there. That breeds a lot of bacteria. Not having that airway open is also going to trap more heat in there. It's not going to allow the heat to escape. So processors really do enjoy it. Even if you're not going to do it yourself, processors really do enjoy it, getting everything out. If you are going to a processor, I wouldn't even feel shy about running water through the inside of that animal, you know, lift it up by its neck so that now you've got everything running, everything can then drain out. But take that sprayer with cold water and run that around the inside if you've nicked something or it just doesn't, you know, feel right to you. You really want to clean that out. Run a hose up in there, spray that all out. I know keeping things dry is a thing that you want to do, but the same thing with tap water that you're coming out of the ground, it's 55 degrees. That's going to start to immediately cool that animal down. Right. Put a fan on it, spread out that rib cage. That will drip dry and you will be all set. There's some other things you can do to even help yourself out further with bacteria growth, especially if you're going to be hanging it up, say, you know, in a garage or up in a tree in a shady yard. There's some other steps you can do, but when it comes to that field dressing, I'd rather you make a few mistakes nicking something on the inside because we can always clean that out. Mm-hmm. But making sure you do a full job, a full thorough job in a timely fashion. I would say those are those two big keys. We're against the clock and we're against bacteria. And so that's why we got to be on top of it as quickly as we can.
Right. No, dude, that right there. I mean, we could wrap this podcast up. I'm sitting here like, holy smoke.
See you later.
Yeah. Dude, that was, I've got so many questions just off of that already. The first thing, well, I guess I'll start it this way. I've heard, like a lot of folks, you know, you want to keep things dry. Like, I always kind of thought in terms of, like, if you get stuff wet, it may, you know, create a more moist environment to breed more bacteria or to breed, you know, make the meat kind of, you know, go bad or sour, but just create a breeding ground for bacteria and stuff. But as long as we're doing that, obviously we don't want to like sit there and soak the meat in, you know, we don't want to put it in a bathtub or anything, but you know, it is okay to spray that out and clean everything off and then just let it, you'd recommend putting it just somewhere where there's a good breeze or put it somewhere that there's a fan just so that it'll evaporate quickly and won't have any issues. But that, you know, getting it wet and everything, it's not going to have any effect on the meat, correct?
Absolutely. There is a lining on the inside of the ribs, inside, mm-hmm. like the gut has a lining to it that does like blood isn't going to get on the muscle because you got the lungs because that's going to stay inside that cavity. Same thing when it comes to the gut, like you're going to spill inside of that stuff. It's not touching directly onto the meat. Now keeping that stuff in there saying, I want to keep things dry to like the nth degree, but yet I got pellets sitting there and I hit your urine and I had urine coming out. Like I'd much rather have you hose that off, spread it out, and that water is going to evaporate and it's going to drip dry. We're not submerging this into a cooler where then it's just going to sit in this stuff, but spray that all out. That way any contaminants that you did have that were visual, that were big enough macro, I would say, like your pellets, any sort of like dirt, any sort of extra blood that was just in there, spray that out, get that out of there. Another thing that and I learned this off a guy who does mobile lambs. So he's got a mobile truck. He slaughters the lamb at the farm and then he then brings it into his truck. He then hits it with a vinegar. He uses red wine vinegar because it's a little bit more mellow. You could use a white distilled vinegar. I wouldn't suggest necessarily the apple cider vinegar. It's a little bit more punchy, but that weak acid, by putting that in a spray bottle and hitting that all over. So you washed it out. You've already let the water's dripping down. It might be a little bit moist on the inside there, but you then spray that vinegar on the inside of that cavity. You're doing one extra step to inhibit any sort of growth that you're going to have that will allow you to hang longer or in the case of it being a little bit warmer, you got some stale air, that's going to inhibit that so that you can get to that tomorrow. It's essentially just a one way of a whole series of different little tips and tricks you can do to get you a couple extra days.
Holy smokes.
Warm as it is, buying yourself time is going to be huge when it comes to being an at-home butcher. Mm-hmm. We all got jobs. We all got families. We all got things we got to do that sometimes our, even though this is a necessity, it may not take priority. So you might have to set yourself up to let this stuff hang if temperatures allow, or a place that it can go, like a refrigerator. But then at the same time, just taking extra precaution when it comes to that. I don't want to have contaminated meat. I don't want it. So I'm not going to the grocery store. I don't know how many hands have touched all that. I don't know where contaminants could have come from. But now that I'm in charge of it, I also have to take those same steps as providing a way to inhibit growth, of find, you know, bring out a quality product that I'm not going to then make my family sick with because mm-hmm. I took shortcuts. So I right. want to make sure that I get that sucker cleaned out, hit it with a little bit of water. That's going to also chill the animal down. I got a box fan in my shop and I just turn that, and its job is just to clean, just to blow on quartered out deer or to, mm-hmm. you know, gutted deer, just to keep that air moving around there, but hit that with a little bit of a weak vinegar there, be it a red wine or a distilled. And that's just going to help create an environment that keeps your meat fresh.
Sure. And that's just a straight red wine vinegar or something. You don't need to water it down or anything.
Out of the bottle of that.
Got it.
I mean, you could water it down if you're mm-hmm. like, I mean, the red wine stuff, it's not the priciest stuff in the world, but at the same time, you're paying money for this to be yeah. a spray on product that you're not going to get a taste from it. So mm-hmm. if you got to water it down, I'm sure that's not bad, but I've just gone straight onto it. I'm not going for like the high end age stuff. I'm right. just going straight red wine vinegar out of the jug,
right.
spraying it out.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to make sure it wasn't like it was too acidic or anything like that, or you needed to dilute it or anything. But man, the thing that jumps out to me is, like you said, when you have a situation where you need to let that deer hang for an extra day, or you need, maybe you don't have time to get to it or whatever, or we were talking off air, chronic wasting disease. You take that thing, you want to get the head tested, you send it in or whatever. A lot of times it takes multiple days to hear back with your results. And depending on the time of year, obviously it's usually when it's peak time and it takes a little longer to get your deer. Usually it's a little bit cooler, so you have some grace period there. But man, yep. that's an awesome tip for folks who, I shot a deer on Monday and I'm not going to hear back until Friday or something like that. You know, it's a really tough decision, that a lot of folks find themselves in, where it's like, I really want to take care of this meat, but I mean, it's a heck of a lot of work to get this thing taken care of, or to take it to a processor and pay $150, $200 to have this thing done, only to have it maybe come back positive for CWD. You know what I mean? So, right. Having anything that can give you just a little bit of extra time, that's a really great tip. Let me ask you this on that note, in terms of, letting stuff hang or letting stuff age. What would you say is like a maximum temperature that you're willing to like, okay, I can let this hang overnight, or I can let this hang and air out for a couple of days and it'll be just fine while I wait for my results?
I don't necessarily get nervous anywhere from like 42 down.
Okay.
Like 42 is a very comfortable range for me. I do all my hanging in, well, right now it's an uninsulated detached garage. So I've got what I refer to as my shop. But it's just a two stall with a cement floor, and I got no windows on it. I got a garage door on it. It does a really good job of staying very cool. So when we get into those fall nights, outside temperature might get up to 55, might mm-hmm. be 60 degrees. I'm going to have somewhere inside of like 10 degrees cooler inside of that shop than it is outside. Now, granted, we live in the woods here, so there's also less sunlight that's coming down hitting that building. But I've got that that concrete floor. That's just a heat sink, and it just literally just stays cold all the time. But I like to keep things right around those low 40s if I'm going to hang for multiple days.
Mm-hmm.
If if I'm looking at the forecast and, you know, I've got my animal and I'm looking at it and shoot, we have one of those Indian summers. We got a heat wave coming in. It's going to be 70s. Shoot, we got to have something. We got to do something. I have a fridge, and actually right now I upgraded to a chiller, but in that shop, it holds two things. It holds deer and it holds beer. And I'm okay with drinking warm beer for the sake of keeping the deer fresh, for keeping that meat cold. So being able to then, if that animal's hanging up, to skin it, quarter it out, and put it into a refrigerator that you've got on standby. I feel like anybody, if they're in the business, or if they have the thought process of like, I want to start doing my own butchery, like having that forethought to have a fridge ready to go, at least cleared out enough that you can then put quarters into that, because that's going to then buy you a couple days that you're going to need to get past that heat, or to be able just to like get to the time that you are going to be cutting it up. We could get into the whole idea of like, what range do I want to hang a deer? Some guys are really on the edge of, hey, it's super lean meat. It doesn't have a lot of fat. It's going to be ready to be cutting up like the next day or in 2 days. So they're going to lean on that side. You got some people that are going to push those limits. Hey, I've got a more controlled environment. I've got a larger chiller. I'm going to hold them for, you know, 14 days. I'm going to do 2 weeks of this thing hanging, and because of the benefit that I get from aging it, at least they feel like they've got a better quality product there at the end of that 18. I find myself at like the 7 to 10. I want to get the age on it. I want to let it go through all of rigor. I feel like I get a much nicer product when it comes to that venison coming out. It's got real tenderness to it, but at the same time, it's realistic. Like I can hold a deer for 7 days, and then if a weekend comes and shoot, I'm at three different soccer games. I can't get to it. We got an event. We got a thing with the family. Like I can hold off on that Saturday and do it Sunday, and that just gets me a little bit of that leeway. So that 7 to 10 is kind of what I aim for as far as aging.
Gotcha.
And anything lower than 42 degrees, like that keeps me happy. But yeah, as soon as temperatures start to creep up, you know, I start getting into them 50s, it's like, oh boy, this is not exactly where I want to be either.
So in that case, if you do find yourself, you know, I'm not going to be able to get it done, or not, let me rephrase that. You do find yourself forecast is looking pretty warm this year, you know, this week or something like that. You are much better the sooner that you can get things, even if it's just like you said, quartered up, throw it in a refrigerator and wait for your results and stuff like that. You should be in a much better position than otherwise. That I think that's a good thing to note too, what you just said is you don't have to sit there and package and, you know, chop up and, you know, grind, like do your full processing procedure while you wait for your stuff. You can still quarter it up into the big things, and then, you know, if you've got the space to do so,
Yep.
you know, hopefully you do, you can keep it cool and stuff like that. Let me ask you this.
This
Just,
just
sorry, go
even
ahead.
I want to go on this with this Pierce too, because we were kind of leading to this, and this might be the segue that I'm stealing from you.
All you, man. Send it.
When we were talking about the CWD thing too, that's on my front door as well. It's forefront in my mind because I've got two counties next to me that have it. Michigan is in the same boat. We're not as far as you guys, so we're watching intently what's going on. But at the same time, it is also on our doorstep. So with that time that I've got, I have not had a big enough scare yet where I'm testing. It's not been in my county. You know, again, patient zero comes into our county, and now it's, you know, it's flagged. Everything's going to be going to testing. But what I can do is, if I'm still green and if I still want to learn how to do this process, I think you should go through the process of going through all of your cuts, at least down, break it down into whole muscle groups. The reason I'm saying do this is because, A, there's an educational benefit to you, but then second, take all that meat, take everything from that deer and box it and throw it in the freezer. Because ultimately, you're not going to get to all that stuff right away. Everything's going to get frozen. But then at the same time, you've now got a product here that you're waiting on that designation to say whether it's positive, whether it's a non-positive. But you get a chance to then get that thing ready to go, box up, see what you have, put that in the freezer. You can deactivate those prions of the CWD on your non-porous equipment. So everything that you're using, as long as it doesn't have any pores into it, you know, the old school wooden butcher blocks, I wouldn't suggest using that with wild game. But if you've got one of those plastic, I'm currently using a steel table, and because it's non-porous and my blades, they're not wood handles. They have like a rubber grip onto them, steel. I soak everything. And there's a guy actually out of Minnesota, north of both of us. He did a study that found a 50-50 mixture of bleach and water. It won't stop the prion from existing. It doesn't fully kill it, but it deactivates it and doesn't let it multiply, so that you can continue to use your knives. You can continue to use your saws, your table, all of your equipment, but you just got to go through that process of deactivating it. If it goes into the cooler, you're going to have to do that with the cooler. So maybe hanging it and then cutting it up right away to save you the added benefit of having to now cleanse your cooler or your fridge. That's going to be a way to stop that process there. But now you learn something from all this. It comes back with that positive designation. Now you got to throw the box out, but it's all boxed up into one thing. You don't have pieces here, pieces there, or more work to do. And the sob story of then having to dump that deer. Yeah, did you put a little extra work in? But at the same time, if you're green behind the ears and you want more practice at butchery, you know, at least glean something off of that now lost product that you would have had.
Got it. Man, that's huge. That's a huge tip. That's something that I've honestly never even heard discussed. Yeah. Just when it comes to like CWD care and stuff.
Yeah, as I'm throwing links around, I will find that episode, because in my episode that I did with, I'm forgetting his name, but he was a professor out of Minnesota. That was one that was, if somebody's going to be taking on this new idea of butchering at home and being a home butcher, you don't want to not have to lose everything because of one deer.
Right.
Again, that stuff spreads once it touches something. This way it at least deactivates it, so you can continue to use your DIY setup.
Right. Well, and that's something too that, I mean, I would imagine it's just in general, you want to do that across, if you're butchering in your kitchen, if you're butchering, in your garage, regardless, you're probably using similar knives or the same kind of stuff. And so just for the sake of keeping everything clean and keeping your entire, food and eating and, kitchen space sanitary and, keeping that stuff from spreading. I mean, that's absolutely huge, man. I'm really, really glad that you said that. We'll definitely put the episode link to that conversation of you and that guy in our show notes here. But so when you say that too, of breaking down the individual, I guess like the muscles is what I'm picturing and stuff, and breaking out down into chunks and stuff. Is that what you're getting at? Is just get it broken down into chunks and off the bone and everything, so that when it does come time, say it does come back negative, then you're able to just grab that stuff, what's what, and you can just get after it, right?
Yes. So if I take apart, so like, let's take the hind leg, for example, of that, I'm going to take off the quarter and I'm going to break it down into, large primal cuts or muscle groups. I'm essentially going to be going seam butchery, where I'm not necessarily cutting into muscles very much, but I'm separating them with the little connective tissue that they have there. I can go ahead and like shave off a bunch of the fat if I wanted to help me find those lines. But again, like if you don't have your distinction, maybe it's just, you follow these seams, you get them, broke them into pieces, much easier to bag than trying to bag an entire forequarter or a hind quarter at that point. Getting the bones out, so now the bones aren't an issue as well either. It's easier to just get that all into the box. But then now that you get the distinction, hey, green light, let's get after this thing, you can pull it out and you can say, hey, this is the top round. What am I going to make with the top round? I could then cut that into individual steaks if I wanted to. I could use that as a roast if I wanted to, go right straight into the crock pot. Keeping things bigger muscle groups, does give you a little bit of variability as far as which direction you want to go. It helps you decide, like, well, I might want this one for this one, and then I want to keep it whole for this time. If you want to change up what you're eating, if you know exactly what you want and you're like, shoot, it is steaks and burger the whole way, then go ahead and cut them into steaks. Most of the time I'm leaving mussels whole in my freezer. So when I pull it out, I know that, like, hey, it's a top round, it's full top round. I'm gonna make jerky out of it. I've got the full piece of jerky and I'm gonna be slicing that down for the big sections. The big slabs of meat that I can then pull off of that. Or if it's going to be like a shank, you know what? I may leave the muscle, or excuse me, I might leave the bone in wet in that for cooking purposes. But by keeping as a whole shank, I can take them, trim them down if I wanted to, if they're going out to the grill, or if they're going to be, you know, just going into the stew pot, I can just throw the whole thing in without too much fussiness. So it opens doors for you. It leaves doors open. Because once you make a cut, that's, you can't undo it. You can't put it back
Right.
together. There is a meat glue that's out there. I haven't toyed with it enough. I want to get into trying to do some fun stuff with this meat glue. But for the most part, once you make a cut, that's it. It's done and over with. But as you get working with your butchering setup, you know, you're going to get better as you go along. The worst thing you can make, and I'm talking the absolute worst thing that you could ever make off of this, is burger. And we all love burger. I used to be one that I said, again, this is one of those cardinal rules. I was like, I want to keep everything from the grinder. I want to keep everything in whole pieces because I felt like this was the way to really celebrate that animal. And then I had three boys and I had to eat crow and I had to pull back a lot of my stuff. And we now get one deer that we completely grind because it's tacos, it's spaghetti, it's burgers. Like, we eat so much ground meat. So, yep, I've definitely swallowed that one. Having, you know, the worst thing being ground. But again, ground is, shoot, that's our Tuesday, Wednesdays. Like, that's how we get by the week is by using that. So if the worst thing you can make is ground, like, shoot, you can't lose. You cannot lose as someone who takes advantage of the opportunity to cut their own meat. So having that set up and being unafraid of making a few miscuts here and there just to learn on it, that's going to help you in dividends later down the road.
Right. Well, I mean, like anything in the outdoors, like any outdoor pursuit, like hunting in general, it's a bit of a journey. You know what I mean? You make those mistakes early on. You figure out what you really like and what your style is, how you like to go about, you develop your process, like your whole thing, right? That's really cool, man. That's a great tip too, what you said about leaving the larger cuts whole. 'Cause I've been guilty of that too, where I go in there and I more or less, I'm trying to make it look like it did when I would get it from the processor. You know what I mean? And so I'm trying to cut my chops, cut my steaks, everything all in the same, shapes, relative size, package, quantity, all that kind of stuff. But then I get done and I'm like, what the hell? Like, when I would do this with my deer at the processor, I'd get like way more meat, it seems, than I'm getting right now. Like, what am I doing wrong? What the hell's like, just what's going on here? I like what you said there about leaving those big cuts big
Yes.
and figuring out what to do with them later. Because one, that's less work up front, and two, you're not backed into a corner after you've made those cuts and you've got, okay, shoot, like, I've not to go at the burger here, but I'm using up most of my burger
Yep.
and I've got, I don't know how many packages of steaks or how many packages of, whatever cut it may be, sitting in my freezer just staring at me like, God, this is going to be a long August and September to clear out the freezer eating nothing but steaks, because we've all been there. But
But here's the
man,
thing
that's a
too,
really,
those
really good,
steaks,
yeah.
you've already cut them into steaks. You took the effort to make them. So yeah, you do want to enjoy those as steaks, but at the same time, that steak came off that same muscle group that could be dropped right through that grinder. If you've got the grind, if you've got the setup, like we were talking earlier, we were just going back and forth. We were talking about grinders. If you've got one already on the shelf and you're like, oh, we're out of ground. No, you're not. You got a bunch of any still sitting right there. Run it through the grinder, add some fat if you want in there, and you've got a new batch of it. you're going to be getting some more steak later. And so, again, keeping things as big whole pieces opens doors, because once you cut them into steaks, you've already locked yourself into, like, this can't be anything other than steak. But we can go from steak to diced. Diced can then go to grind. So that, but that end all be all, the furthest you can go is grind. But to pigeonhole yourself just because you've already cut them into steaks doesn't mean they have to always end up as a steak.
That's a great point there too. And if I needed the extra nudge to go and buy a grinder for this fall, I think that was probably it.
Yes. Yes. That's a valuable piece of equipment, especially if you're going to be doing it yourself, having your own grinder. That's what you want to do.
Totally. So when it, on the note of grinding meat, then too, say you do, you know, you and I, we were talking off air. We both like to harvest multiple deer in a season. Ideally, we have one that we can just grind up, or take to the processor if you're in my situation or whatever. But when it comes to, say, I didn't get out this fall as much as I would have wanted to. I only got one deer. I only got two deer. I got to make this thing count. I do want some burger from it, or I do want to make jerky, or I do want to make snack sticks or something like that with it. What are the cuts that you reach for to put in that grind pile?
Ooh, the one, like, you get your cuts that, so I look at it too, like when it has the animal, you picture where its head is and where its hoof is, and those are the elements that are doing the most work. Anything close to the hooves is going to be moving that animal. Anything close to the head, he's going to be fighting. So using those outlying muscles as something that's going to go into a grinder is going to probably be, on the tenderness scale, probably a really good use of those cuts. So we're talking like the neck. The neck is really good to go through the grinder. It does take a little effort, though, to make sure that you get all of that extra sinew and tallow out of there. And the same thing for like the shanks. Shanks are a good one to, I mean, you can train a kid to shoot. That's what I'm doing with my boys, is that I have them working on the neck, pulling the, you know, cutting the vertebrae out. I have them working on the shanks, really working how to use that blade up against the bone and really scrape that meat off. And then we just go through the process of cleaning it all up. You know, you're trying to take off as much silver skin as you can. To a point, I mean, you don't want to spend all day just cleaning off silver skin. It will run through the grinder eventually. It's not gonna slow it down too much if you've got a little bit here and there. So using those cuts that are, you know, your shanks, your necks, even into the forequarters. I'm a big roast guy. I'm a big stew guy. So I like to dice up a lot of that stuff and save them as pieces. But at the same time, those pieces I have no problem going into the grinder, because I know they're going to get full utilization after that. After a little bit of cleanup, you're going to use every little bit that's going into there. I try to save my hindquarters for my top round. I really like to make jerky out of it. I like big, wide ribbons of jerky that I can lay out. So I'll actually cut, you know, like the long ways, and actually cut with the grain. I like to chew on mine. Stick it in my pouch. I'm not a chewer, but I like to use jerky as my chew. I'll just wad it up and then let it soak there in the pocket for a while. But then I'm using like my bottom rounds. Those are going into pastrami. I'm using a lot of those other bigger cuts for like the inside round. I'm going to be using that for more of a, you know, whether I'm making a stir fry or what I'm doing. So I kind of have designations for those that they traditionally end up with. But like shoulders and shanks and neck, if those are the only things that you put into the grind pile, you're going to have 10, 15 pounds of ground to get to last you for quite a while. Depending on how big your family is, that might be able to suffice. But at the same time, like, you know, once you break that down into burger or, you know, 1 pound packages, you can get a lot of life out of 1 pound. It'll feed you, like, for, like we were talking, your family being just the two of you, that's going to be lunches for a couple days versus with our tribe of five, where it's a 2 pound taco night. It's a 2 pound spaghetti night, and I might get a leftover the next day. chili seems to last a little bit longer in our household. They're not big into leftovers, where I think chili is really good at like day five. That's when chili takes a turn. That's when chili really takes off. So with that, you can get a lot of life out of just 1 pound of ground. So even if it comes out to be just those few cuts, you'll be all right. But at the same time, anything can run through the grinder. You can put, mm-hmm. you can put it all through there and it can all be delicious.
Totally. Man, dude, this has me fired up to get some deer on the ground. I'll tell you that. I'm with you there too on the day five of chili. Once you let those flavors really come together, and I don't know, there's something about, I know some people, it's like a topic of contention whether or not they'll eat cold food or, you know, like refrigerated pizza, or like my girlfriend will not do it. She wants nothing to do with cold food. She just can't do it. But I'm like, just get me a spoon and let's get after it. That's
her upbringing was a little rough. Like they were a little rough with their expiration dates. There wasn't a lot of like care taken on a lot of that. So she's hyper vigilant on a lot of that stuff. I was mm-hmm. just talking about this is stuff that I'm even looking at, but I was looking at the amount of food waste that we do have. And even as people as conscious as we are to try to use as much as possible, like I'm seeing a lot of like cereal get thrown out. I'm seeing a lot of like veggies that like we just didn't get around to using, but like, mm-hmm. you know, they get pitched right away. And I'm like, we could do something. I didn't get the memo that we were throwing this out today. Like there are plans for this, but now it's in the trash and I can't go back on that. I'm not going to George Costanza it and reach in and then reapply. Like I can't go there. But at the same time, like to be conscious of our food waste, you know, that's one of those things like waste, not want not. If I'm finding what to do with the food that I have, whether that's now, it is reaching expiration as a fruit or vegetable. Now I know when milk goes bad. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, to take those items that are reaching the end and make them into something, or like be ready to use them at that one point. That's been something I think I've kind of been on my heart a little bit, is like, shoot, man, we're throwing a lot away that we shouldn't be. And yet the bills are not, those grocery bills are definitely not getting any smaller. Especially this year with, you know, everything in turmoil and all of elections and everything else, like food prices mm-hmm. are super high. So whatever we can do to maximize, and if that means putting down another deer and running them through the grinder just to have that little bit of peace of mind, that might be what people need to be doing.
100%, man. I really like recording with other podcasters because you know exactly how to segue into a nice tight closing, man. But dude, you hit it right on the head. Took the words right out of my mouth. Like that's something that I think is a big reason why a lot of us hunt too, is to be able to save a little money and know exactly where we're getting our food. And with that coming, okay, like it's one thing, you know, to toss out a little bit of cereal, but it's another thing. It hits just a little bit deeper when you end up having to throw out a piece of venison, when you know that, like, okay, like I took the responsibility of taking that deer's life and, you know, caring for it. And I just let that one Tupperware sit in the back of the fridge a little too long or whatever it may be. But man, it's all good stuff to be thinking about. And it's all stuff that I'm hoping folks are really looking forward to, just like we are in the coming weeks here as season starts to open up. But man, I learned a ton just through this conversation. I know our listeners did as well. I might have to get you back on here and get some of these recipes, because whether we absolutely do an episode or not, I'll definitely be there,
Pierce. We got lots right. to do, so. Yeah, man.
We'll exactly. We made another date. Definitely, man. But dude, I know it's Monday night here, Labor Day weekend. I'm going to let you get back and get ready for the week and spend some last minute time with the family. But dude, I appreciate you coming on, and I look forward to putting some of these tips to work in the coming week. Notice I said week, not weeks there. But
Oh, man. That's fine.
Yeah, not to rub it in. not
I'm
to rub
gonna
it
be
in,
Monday
but
morning quarterback, Pierce. You're gonna put a deer down, and I expect a phone call. I want full
deal.
details, and I want to see the job that you did. I want to see the field dressing. I want to see what you're doing as far as hanging them up, what you're doing with your temperature care there, how you're going to keep them chilled out. If you're going to try the vinegar blast, I think you're going to like that.
I'm
but if you're going
definitely
to cut
doing
this,
that. Yeah.
Yeah. If you're going to cut this up yourself, as you're waiting for the results, cut them up, put them in a box, disinfect all of your stuff, use that 50-50 bleach water disinfectant for 5 minutes, rinse everything off, and that will deactivate that prion. But at the same time, like, that's just going to get you that more knife practice. And if push comes to shove, yeah, like we said, we just make it into grind, and then we have so many the possibilities are endless then at that point. So
exactly.
Having more wild game into your diet is always going to make you a better person.
100%, dude. But man, I will definitely keep you in the loop here, hopefully as I get one on the ground in the next couple of days. And I look forward to seeing some grip and grins and good recipes from you as well. Good luck this fall, man.
You bet.
That's all for this week's episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you liked this episode, please be sure to subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're at it, if you could leave me a 5-star review, I would appreciate that a ton. You can also follow along with my outdoor adventures on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube at the Wisconsin Sportsman Pod. That's also the best way to get a hold of me to suggest topics, guests, or questions you'd like me to explore in this show. Big thanks to our awesome partners, XOP, Onyx, and Huntworth. Please go support the brands that support this show. And if you're looking for more awesome outdoor content, go check out thesportsmansempire.com, where you'll find a ton of other outdoor podcasts. And until next time, make sure you make the time to get outside and enjoy the incredible natural resources that are ours as Wisconsin sportsmen.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.